right, everybody. Yep. Welcome to Liquid Luggage episode number 2. Here we are with our good friend and partner in this endeavor, Phil Minasalli, Spirits Broker from PM Brokerage. And we're going to talk about a few things in this Liquid Luggage segment, friends. We're happy to bring it to you. Right now, we're talking whiskey, Phil, and we've got a couple fine examples thereof in our glasses.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about spirits with a sense of place, bourbon.
Yep.
This is one that people know in the U.S. This can't be made anywhere else. Rye whiskeys are very commonly produced here as well. So we got a couple in our glass right now. We got the Deadwood Rye. This is a 95% rye, 5%.
And that's pretty high even for a rye. Is that kind of the norm for a rye?
I think this particular mash bill is going to, I mean, other than a pure rye, like 100% rye,
yeah,
which is not as common.
Yep.
The 95.5 is a very known mash bill for rye whiskey.
And is the 5 corn?
The 5 is actually malted barley.
Malted barley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So this one has that right up spiciness that you get from your ryes. The aromatics are that they're awesome. I get like a candied note to it as mm-hmm. well. What's really beautiful about this particular, so Deadwood is a source whiskey. It is barreled in Kentucky. It's all going to be in Kentucky, but if you'll look on the bottle, it will say distilled in Indiana and Tennessee.
Okay.
So it's going to be meticulously sourced from those locations. And the gentleman that built the Deadwood brand is well known for building a very, very successful brand that's still successful now, which is, why am I blanking on it right now? It's Redemption.
Redemption, that's right. I think I knew that, actually.
Redemption, yeah. So Redemption Rye is one of Dave's first projects that he worked in the bourbon and the American whiskey segment, and then sold to a larger group and immediately started putting down barrels again.
Okay.
So right now, these are the first initial releases from his company called Proof and Wood Ventures. And it's only going to explode into some really amazing expressions. He's not just getting rye. He's getting bourbon. He's getting a light whiskey, which is really, really cool. He also has different mash bills of each of them.
Okay. So. Now, there's a couple things that are striking me on this. I find this very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this will play nice in a lot of cocktails. I mean, it's pretty versatile, really, I think, in a lot of ways. The other thing, and people, you can find shots of the bottle, so you'll see what I mean when I'm talking about this, on our Liquid Luggage segment. Go to the NOLADrinks.com homepage, look for the Liquid Luggage banner, click on it, look for episode 2, you'll see it there. It's a larger bottle, isn't it?
It is. It's a liter bottle.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole focus, is the approachability factor and the cocktail ability factor for bartenders. So this is a beautiful, tall liter bottle that fits beautifully in a rail.
Mm-hmm.
So it, like some of the other spirits that I'll talk about, having that ability to be approachable, not just for the way it tastes, but physically in a rail. Those big square bottles and this and that sometimes don't make sense.
Sure.
Or the short, squatty bottles sometimes don't make sense. It
right.
has to be something you could easily grab.
Holds a little more liquid, so you don't have to go
yep.
fetch another bottle.
Yeah, yeah. A high volume situation, it is really friendly for that type of bartender.
And what kind of, as it relates to that, Phil, what are we talking about price point here? How is it? Where is it priced to kind of sit on a bar list, and or if you're looking, you know, just pick it up retail?
Yeah, it's a great price from the wholesaler. Retail, you can get the liter bottle for $25.
Okay.
So it is a great value whiskey, and you will not be disappointed for how it tastes.
Mm-hmm. I think you're exactly right. There's some nice, and there's a little, some almost honey note to it, and
mm-hmm.
I get some nice bright, almost like white stone fruit kind of note to it. There's
yeah,
a nice
like,
fruity note to it.
Yeah, like a peach.
Like a peach note, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And I've tasted this before, and I didn't quite catch that the first time, but it's popping a little more to me now.
Yeah, it's opened up a little bit.
Opened up a little bit. That bottle's been sitting there in my care for some time. I brought it back to you, and I didn't drink all of it.
I am impressed.
Thank you. And I'm not saying, and it's, let me tell you out there, friends, it's not because I didn't like it. It's because I was trying to be a good friend and partner in Liquid Luggage to my buddy Phil.
Thank you.
Sure, people can believe that if they want to. But it's true. It's very true.
If you said to me, you know what? I don't have that bottle anymore. I wouldn't have been that upset.
I kind of figured you wouldn't, so maybe you'll let me take it home again. How's that? And then I'll just bring you back an empty bottle.
There you go.
So we've got another Deadwood expression here also. Go ahead and tell us about this one. It's a heavy rye mash bill, but we're talking bourbon.
Right, so a good segue from the rye 95.5. Now you're dealing with what is known in the industry as a high rye bourbon. So rye brings some spice. I think it brings a lot of complexity. It also cuts down on a touch of that sweetness that a heavier corn bourbon will. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So compared to the Tumbling Dice, we do have a Deadwood bourbon, but that guy is going to be a 75-21 rye, 4% malted barley. So this gives you just a bit more. Less corn, 60%, 36% rye, and 4%. Percent barley. So it does bring out quite a bit of complexity. And Tumbling Dice is the brand that also is going to be this expression, which will be a small batch, so a bunch of barrels, say 10 to 15 barrels, that are all going to be put together, and it'll be proofed down to 100 proof.
Okay.
So 50% there. In addition to that, Dave has made single barrels accessible to markets as well, with the support of the 100 proof, this 3-year age statement bourbon.
It's interesting because it first impressions, Phil, as I sip it, it's certainly not as sweet as one might expect from a bourbon. Very much as you said,
right?
So that heavy rye mash bill is exactly how you mentioned it to me. And then with 100 proof, it brings some heat. In a good way. So this to me is kind of an ideal, if you want to use it in a cocktail, this is an ideal cocktail where you need that proof to kind of pop and you don't want a lot of outside sweetness coming in.
Sure. Sure. I love this one. Neat for the youthfulness of it. I think it's a sweet spot for a young bourbon. 3 years is that. Now, granted, that is, again, a minimum age. So there may be other barrels that will fall in at 4 or 5 or 6 years. It just all comes down to the blending process, finding that sweet spot of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Also, color. You know, there's going to be no added color, so everything's coming from the barrels. So when you think about that, not every barrel is going to mature the same way. It's its own living creature.
Absolutely.
So you put 10 barrels up on the same particular day in a similar charred barrel, the same size, they are all going to taste a little bit different. So that's the beauty of the single barrel program, is it gives you like a really finite, expression of what this particular whiskey can do in one barrel versus the barrel that might be 30 feet away from it in a different part of the warehouse.
Gotcha. So we got a couple minutes, maybe a minute left, Phil, before we're going to take a brief pause. What's the price point on this roughly retail?
$35 to $40.
Okay. Make a mean old fashioned, without a doubt. There's one other little note that I want to mention to people on it that I'm getting on the tasting note. I'm getting this nice little kind of saline note on it that, especially on the palate, that actually to me, and don't get me wrong, it doesn't taste like scotch, but it kind of harkens to that, especially on the finish. I find that really interesting, and I think that could be really just nice on the rocks and that way.
Yeah, there's great depth to this this bourbon. I do think that high rye mash bill, it to my palate, brings a bit more complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Like this mash bill will stand up to world whiskeys in terms of character, whereas that higher corn mash bill sort of lives within that realm. Of American whiskey.
Okay, cool. Well, friends, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a brief pause here, and then we're going to come back and taste another very interesting spirit called Geneva. We're going to make an interesting connection to whiskey since we just tasted some whiskeys, and we're going to tell you about how to make a classic Negroni, but we're going to use Geneva instead of gin, and we'll probably make that connection too, friends. Brief pause here on Liquid Luggage, episode number 2. All right, we're back, Liquid Luggage friends, episode number 2 with our good friend Phil Minasalli from PM Brokerage. And Phil, we have a very interesting spirit here. Now we just went through a couple of nice expressions of whiskey from Deadwood, and now we're going to taste a Geneva. And we've talked about Geneva on the show before. It's an ancestor of gin, I think is kind of fair to say, but it's its own thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's got its own, in the wine world you would use, just in the spirit world, the AOC.
Yeah.
So as of 2008, the Dutch government, EU, created the official AOC for Geneva.
And where does it come from? Where's the geographic range? That's primarily.
So you're going to look at Holland is the original location. So the Netherlands being like one of the original locations, a town called Schiedam is where all of the original Genevers were coming from.
Right.
And what's fun about Geneva is when you think of how trade was happening at the time, Geneva was at one point the number one consumed spirit in the world, traded spirit in the world.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. And there are some areas that because of colonialization and all these, you know, trade routes that led, bringing a bottle of Geneva to some, say, like a tribe in Africa is still a welcomed greeting.
Oh, really? Like, oh, yeah. I didn't remember that part of the story. Okay, yeah. That's really cool.
This is one of the strange things that's happened because of the history.
And the Dutch being all over the world, right? And so they're right. Carrying Geneva on ships, and that makes all the sense in the world. So, and friends, I will tell you that we did, as I mentioned, we did a show not too long ago on Geneva. I'll put that in the show notes and liquid luggage notes. So if you want to hear more about the spirit, we're talking about this one here in particular, Phil. So I'd like you to talk about By the Dutch, and it's the old Geneva. And let's talk about the mash bill, because we tasted some whiskeys before, and I think what's really interesting here is maybe I'm not a gin guy, and that's why I brought up the relationship, if you will, with gin. This might be a nice kind of bridge thing. You're going, I'm not a gin guy. Well, if you're a whiskey guy, you might find something in this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or gal.
Sure, yeah. Whiskey gal. Guy.
Guy, sorry. You know, I want to be.
I really like this because it shows you... We don't have, I mean, sure, we do like a White Dog whiskey. Remember that time when everyone was drinking white whiskey? It was like, it was a thing. Mm-hmm. So granted, this is a much more complex process. They are using the traditional, you know, column distillation, pot stills. There's a three distillations, but you are starting with those three same ingredients. You've got fermented wash, that's barley, malted barley, corn and rye. And rye, as we discussed in the Deadwood whiskey, rye can have like this strong, really aromatic, but if it's like really, really present, it can almost bring like a little bit of a harshness. So it's typically not 100%. You have something to soften it. Barley is commonly used because it has all the enzymes, which are really critical in the fermentation process.
Okay.
So like the super starches and enzymes that help bond everything together. And corn is known for kind of that sweetness.
Bringing some sweetness, yeah.
And cutting a little bit of the harsh flavor that could come from like a 100% rye wash.
Right.
So it covers all the grounds for a early American whiskey.
Right, it makes sense, right? We kind of have the malt, the up front and center. Then the barley's more front and center than what maybe it would be in an American whiskey.
Sure, and in early trade, being Geneva was one of the first introduced spirits to other parts of the world, it might have influenced some American production methods.
That's a very reasonably speculated.
So
there.
You're dealing with the wash. You got a first distillation, a second distillation. The third distillation is where you're going to get the botanical influence. So juniper is going to be the juniper berries. Then you essentially have your malt base from that. And then blended, and then you have the traditional Geneva.
Yeah, and it's really smooth. It's really clean. And I think one significant contrast to gin is that the botanicals take more of a back seat to the mash bill,
and
right?
And the body, the complexity of the body, where you know you hear the language dry in terms of gin. I think that dryness and that descriptor comes from the distillation methods that soften the body, like bring the body to a really light place.
Right.
That,
right.
I think, is synonymous with our palate as recognizing dry versus sweet or full or heavy.
Right.
And this distillation process really retains the structure.
Absolutely.
And the depth of the spirit.
Super clean, super nice. And then what we've done here too, friends, we've made a cocktail with it. And we've talked about this on the show before, not too long ago, with a Negroni. And so what, Phil, basically what you've done is you've made a Negroni instead of using gin, use Geneva. Now the Negroni, of course, is one part gin, one part vermouth, usually sweet vermouth, and then one part well, Campari being the big brown, but an aperitivo, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, what have you done here? And tell us just in a couple minutes.
So
about
the Dutch
this drink.
Negroni, as
that's what we're calling this, is the Dutch Negroni, right?
Okay. As by the Dutch Geneva. would ask me to describe it.
Fair
as,
enough. Fair enough.
We're going with the Dutch Negroni, so we have equal parts, just like any type of bitter, you know, cocktail base. You have one part of your Geneva, one part of your bitter liqueur, one part of your vermouth. So what I did is I took by the Dutch, I took Tuve, which is a, we were discussing some liqueurs and some vermouths previously. This is a really fun one. It has a touch more sweetness, but it also uses the original coloring methods to get the depth. And if you know your history of bitter liqueurs in Italy, they use a beetle. So that color comes from that. So for your gluten-free people, maybe not your liqueur to go
Fair enough. Word of advice there. Good one. Okay.
Because this will use the original coloring. And then I went with their line of vermouths, which are called Drappo, and I went with the rosé because it kind of balances out the dry white vermouth with the sweeter red vermouth. And it's great just on its own, chilled or neat, aperitivo, but I think it really enhances the spirit base with the body here.
I dig it, man, because I think what would happen to if you were to use a heavier, sometimes my problem with a Negroni, the vermouth choice to me is so much of what makes a Negroni a Negroni.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using this really cloyingly sweet, medicinal tasting sweet vermouth, it can be a really heavy drink. And and this is so light. This is kind of like a summer Negroni to me. And I think if you used one of those heavier sweet vermouths out there, you would basically just run the Geneva over. And we're getting some of the notes from the Geneva that are coming through. I taste the mash bill, you know, with the grains in there, and I'm getting a little bit of the botanical, and then we just get that nice bitter note from the bitters from the Tuve, and then the rosé just brings a nice like light touch of fruit and this lighter body kind of airy characteristic to it.
Yeah, I think some of the tasting notes on the finish of the Geneva can be like a little baking spice. You know, you could have a little bit of like the bitter orange and the cinnamon and the clove. Yep. Present on the finish because of the botanical nature of the Geneva. The tasting notes on the finish of the rosé vermouth are kind of similar. So your bitter liqueur is really your binding agent for them to all lead down that same path. And you're right, it is lighter, crushable in the language of the cocktail world.
Yes. Quaffable, if you will. Well, Phil, we've got about a minute left before we're going to close out this liquid luggage segment here. So tell people where they can find you first and foremost, and tell people with these three, with the vermouth, the Tuve bitter, and the by the Dutch Geneva. Find out more about those.
To find me online, I've got a website, Phil M as in Mary Brokerage, philmbrokerage.com. And I've got, if you need to reach me, there's a contact button. You could just shoot me an email. As for the spirits, these three products come from the same portfolio. It's an OG importer, a guy named Henry Price. I know I've mentioned him, and he's maybe been a guest on your show in the past. Mm-hmm. You can go to priceimports.com. There's a PDF catalog document, and there are actually active clickable links to every single brand that's in the portfolio. And it'll give you a great, you know, one-page description of every product and some tasting notes and awesome. Some cocktail suggestions as well.
It's a really good presentation. That's PRISS imports.com. Friends, Phil, thanks for Liquid Luggage number 2, buddy.